the trust problem in Nigeria and even Africa in general is really, really bad. Like, people, they don't trust online businesses. We built a product for a hungry market, right? It was as if the market was already waiting for the product. You can build the best product and the market will tell you that they are not using it. The first mistake that I've seen people make is the fact that they try to freestyle their pitch. But pitches are actually not like that. It's usually structured, and if you don't follow that structure, you're not going to win. Whenever you're talking about your team, it's not the time to be humble. Humility is not going to help you in that case. At the early stage of any company, most investors are not investing in the idea. They are investing in the people. So it's really important to let people know that you are the best person to solve this problem.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi, Omolara. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How have you been? How's your week been so far?
It's been good. Trying to settle in for the new year.
Awesome. What's been like the most interesting thing that's happened to you this year?
We welcomed some new team members.
Awesome. That's good. So you were in your hiring phase towards the end of last year. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm very excited to have you on today's podcast, get to hear about your story, mid-month story, and just dive into all those interesting stuff. But before we get started, for anyone listening, watching, I would like to quickly introduce Omolara to us. Omolara Sani is the co-founder of Middleman, a fintech platform revolutionizing how African businesses connect to the global e-commerce economy. Omolara has played a pivotal role in crafting Middleman's vision, leveraging her expertise in storytelling, content strategy, and user engagement to drive the company's growth. Under her leadership, Middleman achieved an extraordinary milestone of processing over 1 billion in transactions volume, a testament to her innovative approach and focus on customer-centric solutions. Her journey from working at Utiva to co-founding one of Africa's leading fintech startups is a source of inspiration to many aspiring entrepreneurs. Welcome to the podcast officially, Omolara.
Thank you so
yeah.
much.
You're welcome. So before we get into the conversation, I play games with my guests. So today's game, I don't know if you're aware, but today's game is going to be two truths and a lie. So you're going to tell me three facts about yourself, and one of them is going to be a lie, and I'll identify the lie. All right, let's
go. You are going to guess the lie, right?
Yeah, I'm going to guess the lie.
Number one, I used to be a cybersecurity analyst.
Okay.
Number two, I'm engaged.
Okay.
And number three, I haven't traveled out of the country before.
Those are tough ones. Oh my gosh, those are tough ones. Let's see.
Try.
So I feel like number one, majorly cause I know I checked through your LinkedIn and I didn't see any trace of cybersecurity when I was preparing for this podcast. I feel like I saw other things and I didn't see any trace of cybersecurity. So if I have to pick, I think I'll pick number one as the lie. Let's see.
Okay. Unfortunately, you're wrong.
Oh my God.
I used to work in cybersecurity before I switched to marketing.
Oh, that's interesting. Why didn't you put it out?
It's there.
Really? I didn't see it. Oh my God. Are you serious? Oh my God. Wow.
It's a company
wow.
called Eccentry. I was there for over a year.
Oh, wow. So that should have been an easy one for me, right? It should have been easy for me. So what's the lie?
Yeah, the lie is that I'm engaged. I'm not engaged.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. That was fun. And you made it really hard for me.
Yeah.
Okay. But that was good. All right. So I think a good place to start the conversation is on a really high note. And that was how I even got to know about Middleman. Last year, Middleman caused like over 1 billion in transaction volumes. And for me, that's like an incredible milestone for any startup at all. So I want to ask, when you had that, you know, milestone hit, how did that make you feel as a co-founder? How are you feeling? You know, what was going through your mind when you just had this achievement?
I mean, from like the minute we crossed 900 million, I've been checking it. I check it every day. So it was quite easy to know that we had crossed the milestone. I was super excited. So my co-founder and I have been doing business before Middleman. So even at the time, I remember that when we made our first million from our e-commerce business, the same way we took a screenshot and celebrated the milestone. So for us, it's something that we really do. When we had our first transaction, we celebrated it. So small wins, big wins, we are always excited about it.
Awesome. And I want to be sure, when I was doing my research, I think you started Middleman in, at that time, it was about 7 months for you to hit the 1 billion transaction volume. So I'm really curious, if you had to like distill the things that made you get so, like, grow so fast, three things, what would you say are like the three things that, you know, made Middleman grow so fast from like conception to hitting the milestone?
So I would say number one, very important, is the fact that we built a product for a hungry market, right? So our product that helps businesses pay their Chinese suppliers was like a game changer for us. It was as if the market was already waiting for the product. So it was a major problem for businesses. So when we came, the adoption was really easy. So people started to use the product almost like, I think a week after our official launch,
we started to get people
to use the platform. Number two, I would say, I would accredit that to the fact that my co-founder and I are both marketing professionals. So we really savvy this thing. So
I know, right?
Yeah, so awesome. good marketing as well. And also a lot of partnerships to making noise about what we do, basically. The same way you see me online talking about our companies, the same way my co-founder does. And even as much as you might not think that that goes a long way, it really does, because for us, we had like 15% of our users that came from referrals, people just talking about us to a business owner without incentivizing anyone. And I would really attribute that to the fact that we are always talking about our product, whether or not I'm talking to somebody that actually needs it. I mean, it's possible that you are not a business owner, but you probably have friends that also import from China. And one way or the other, it will come up in conversations and you'll be like, oh, you're having problem paying your supplier. We had this customer that did like a really big volume in transaction. She's also a startup founder, but she also runs like a jewelry business on the side, and she imports from China. And it was her husband that actually found Middleman. And when she was having issues paying her supplier, and she was like, oh, why don't you try these guys? That is somebody that doesn't do business, but his wife does. So really talking to any and everybody about our business.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I like what you said about the first one, where you mentioned you built for a hungry like market. I was having a conversation in one of my previous episodes with a co-founder as well, and one thing he mentioned was, you know, you don't build and then wait for people to come and, you know, patronize you. You make sure that those people are already, you know, they're there, they are ready to buy your product, and then you build something that, you know, that they are in need of. That way, even when you market, you really do not necessarily struggle, because you know that people are in need of that, your product. So for Middleman, I think that's where you leaned in. And, you know, I think what you do, is it just for e-commerce businesses?
Just African businesses generally. As long as you import from China, you can always use our platform.
Okay, so would you like to, I'm sure people listening and watching may not really be much familiar with Middleman, so just tell us, like, explain what Middleman does to those that are a bit unfamiliar.
Okay, so basically a middleman, we help businesses pay their Chinese suppliers with ease. So you can always come to our platform to convert your Naira to the Chinese currency and make payments to for your goods in China, basically. Also, if you want to deliver to your customers within Nigeria and some other parts of UK, US, you can always use the platform as well to book deliveries. We have over 40 logistics companies aggregated in one place for businesses to choose from.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. So you also do like delivery and logistics also.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So which part of the business is more like profitable? Is it the logistics
definitely payments. Yeah.
Curious. All right, that's fine. You also talked about how you and your co-founder have been like working together prior to Middleman. And so when he mentioned, like, who had the initial idea of Middleman? Was it you, him?
Okay, so Middleman was inspired by a problem that we faced. So both of us used to run e-commerce businesses. We did that for about 5 years. So basically the problems that we faced at the time are what Middleman currently solves.
Okay, so when you were going into, like, when you were going into the business, right?
Yeah.
How were you scared, or were you like, okay, will this thing work? Or you had like 100% assurance that okay, this business is gonna work?
No, we did not.
Okay.
So actually, Middleman started off as an escrow payment platform. So as much as we faced payment problem, logistics problem during our e-commerce days, the major one was still trust. People did not trust us to pay before delivery. They wanted to see the products first. And a lot of the times when we decide to take the risk and send products to them, we would lose money. So that was the first problem Middleman set out to solve. And we launched that in October of 2023. But about 3-4 months into launching that product, we discovered that the market was not ready for what we had built. The trust problem in Nigeria and even Africa in general is really, really bad. Like, people, they don't trust online businesses. And even though the product we built was amazing, it was not difficult to convince vendors. It was still the buyers that was like really difficult to convince. Of course, they don't trust the vendors. They still do not trust Middleman. So we had to listen to our customers and then solve other problems for them. And that was how we launched our payments to China as well as
to China. Okay. So let's talk a bit about the early stages of Middleman. In one of your LinkedIn posts, you talked about personally calling, you know, the personally calling new users that had signed up for Middleman. So how was that like? Do you think this necessarily contributed to the growth of Middleman?
Yeah, definitely. It sort of informed the kind of marketing that we did, also informed the new products that we built. So at the time, we were even like doing it in such a way that if you sign up in like 10 minutes, you're going to get a call from us asking where you signed up, where you found us, if you have found the product useful to solve your problem. And some of the feedback that we got really helped us. And I know that, just like I said in the post, is not a sustainable thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was because we had, like, we were still growing, the number of users weren't so much, that was why we could do that. But the feedback was really invaluable, and it really informed some of the other products that we built, as well as the way we interact with our customers.
Okay. Yeah, I know it can be interesting of when you're just like calling everybody, but even though it's not necessarily scalable, I think it makes sense at the early stages to really get feedback from your customers, because not just calling, I think one of the results of keeping tabs with new signups are, you know, the feedback that you get. So in your situation, do you remember any particular feedback that you got that really shaped the direction of Middleman? Do you remember one or two feedback that you got from users?
I think the one that really stood out for me was people asking for APIs, e-commerce businesses that actually have their own websites, asking us that if we could, they could plug into our API so that their customers can see Middleman as an option to check out. And so because of that, building an API is part of our roadmap now. So so that other e-commerce businesses can then
plug into utilize
it.
Okay, that's interesting, because I was going to ask you, you're a non-technical founder, and you talked about APIs now, so I'm like, okay, you're already pulling it to the tech space. So how does it feel like to be a non-technical founder? And what I'm asking is, I've spoken to other co-founders, and you know, a lot of times the other co-founder, one is on the business side, can really maybe write code to some extent. The other person is like hardcore writing code. So as a non-technical founder, how have you navigated that whole space?
Okay, so I think the major problems that we face as non-technical founders is the fact that starting is hard, because of course if you're a technical founder, you can always write the codes by yourself. It's easy for you to quickly build your MVP and put something out there. But for us, we had to use our money to pay people to write the code. And I remember that there was somebody that we paid at the time. He just kept stalling, kept pushing the thing forward, and we had to let him go and then employ another person. And at some point, we had to say that, oh, we cannot keep doing this. We need to find people that are going to be a part of the team and come on board to build this thing with us. So that's like the major problem that we face. Another thing also is understanding like their technical terms, but of course I was able to learn some of that. And also, as much as my co-founder is also non-technical, he's a bit more, he has more knowledge in that area than I do. So he handles like product development, he enjoys working with developers, designers, product manager. So he's mostly focused on that. But of course, when they are talking, there's nothing they are saying that I really do not understand, unless they are being like very, very technical.
When they want to hide something from you. That's good to know. I love the fact that at least you're not just in your space, you know, you're also going out there to try to understand how they relate and really understand the technologies. So you were like, let's say, contracting jobs out to like freelancers earlier, right?
Yeah.
But now you just mentioned that you hired. So how was that transition like from getting, you know, working with freelancers to hiring? How did that whole transition happen? How many staff do you have right now at Middleman?
So right now we are about 12 on the team.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think at that time, the major problem was trying to convince them to come and build this thing with us, because of course it was pretty new. There was no money to pay them at the time. So it was important that you sell the dream, they see the vision with you and believe in it as well. Also, having track record of good work also really helped us. So they trusted us. They knew that, oh, we've been in this field for a while. We've been doing stuff for other startups. And now that we've decided to build our own, they believe in us that we are going to put everything, all of our strength, hard work in it to make it work. So I think really convincing them to come on board on this journey, even though they weren't getting paid exactly what they actually deserve to be paid, was like the major thing that we had to do at the beginning.
Okay. So like selling the dream to them and letting them like just key into that dream, the bigger picture, so to say.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so what do you look out for when you're hiring, in like as a co-founder, hiring someone to fill a role now that you just recently hired, whether it's marketing, content, like software engineers? What are some of the, I would say, soft skills out of the hard skills, like, okay, this person can do this for the culture that you're trying to build at Middleman? What are one or two soft things that you look out for?
Yeah, so I think the very first one for us is empathy. Being able to like put yourself in the shoes of the customer. So for us, one of our values is being customer-centric. We have this lingo that we use in the team, whatever it takes. So having a team member that will go extra mile, do whatever it takes to satisfy a customer is really important to us. Yeah, so our customers always come first. Also teamwork, right? So it's important that anybody coming on board is able to blend in with the team. And also because of that, if we are hiring for like maybe a product management intern, the current product manager will be in the meeting, right? So we are also bringing them on board to ensure that, oh, this is somebody that they can also work with. So getting the buy-in of existing team members, especially if they are going to be working together, is also very important to us. So okay. Yeah, those are like the major
empathy ones. And
teamwork.
Okay, yeah. Has there been anyone that you hired and you had to let go in the past?
So far, no. We haven't had to do that yet.
Awesome. So let's talk about your own personal journey. Earlier, you pranked me. You said, "Okay, you were a cyber security analyst."
Yeah.
But what has your career journey been like? I know you also worked at Utiva,
yeah.
And then you're into like product marketing. You're now a co-founder of one of Africa's foremost fintechs.
Yeah.
So, how did all of this come about?
Okay, so. When I was in school, in my final year, okay, let me put it out there, I attended Moshoeda Bello Polytechnic, so I'm an HND graduate. I like to state that not because I want to convince an organization to hire an HND graduate or to convince a BSc holder that an HND graduate is just like you. It's majorly for the HND graduates, right? For them to see possibilities beyond the limits that society has placed on the certificate that they carry, right?
Yeah.
So when I was in school in my final year, my friend, can you still hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Oh, okay. So my friend was in FUNAB at the time, and for a long time he had tried to convince me to come to FUNAB to take a project management training.
And okay, FUNAB is
Federal University of Agriculture,
okay.
Yeah. My school was also in Abeokuta, so
okay.
I had been stalling on going there for the training, but fortunately or unfortunately, in my final year, our lecturers decided to go on strike the day we were supposed to start
Nigeria.
Our final exams. So it was a good opportunity to attend the training because, of course, I wasn't doing anything, and the first day of the training was literally life-changing, right? I was exposed to a lot of things about the tech industries, the kind of career that was waiting out there, the opportunities that were available beyond just what we were taught in school. So it was really eye-opening, right? And I was also like a bit active in class, so I was noticed by the organizers, which is Utiva. But at the time, they were called something else before they changed their name. So because the training was so good, I was so excited, so I went back to my school. Whether you care to listen or not, I will tell you about the training. So also because of that, I showed interest in taking the training to my school because I wanted everybody to benefit from it. And even though we were still on strike at the time, I was made the campus lead ambassador. And this was 2017. Remote work was not a thing, but even though we were on strike, I was able to put together a team virtually of other campus ambassadors. We were marketing the training in our class WhatsApp groups. And even though we were not able to hold the training in our school at the time, we convinced students to go to FUNAB for the next cohort of the training, and they attended the training there. And because of the relationship that I also had during that time with the organization, when I finished my final year exam, I was able to apply and I got in as an intern. So, which was like my first major job after school. So I moved to Lagos, stayed with my brother, and I was there for 3 months. And that was where I learned like basic work ethics, how to send emails, how to write proposals, operations, all of those things. It was a wonderful 3 months, and after that, because I have ND and HND, I went on to use my ND to take a bank job. You won't find it anywhere on my LinkedIn or my CV. You can even
no matter how much you set on the internet. to that part of your life.
Yeah, you won't find it anywhere. But I did a teller job in the bank.
Wow. Would have thought. Yeah.
Then I went for my NYSC. So I camped in Ondo State, But I knew that I didn't want to teach during NYSC. It was like a dream of mine. Like, I was so determined I was not going to teach during NYSC. So I relocated to Lagos after camp. And then I started to share my CV, telling people that I was looking for a PPA. But during my time at Utiva, I remember taking a cybersecurity boot camp. It was about 3 days, girls only boot camp. And that was my first exposure to cybersecurity.
Utiva, so, that organized.
No, it was a random.
It was just
another. I saw online and I applied, yeah.
Okay.
So when I returned, we still had like a WhatsApp group where people share opportunities. So I put it out there that, so I'm looking for a PPA. And somebody told me to bring my CV. I was interviewed, and that was how I got into cybersecurity. Yeah. So I did cybersecurity for about 1 year and 6 months before I decided to do marketing. And it was quite obvious at the time that marketing was what I wanted to do, because even though I was doing cybersecurity, you would catch me taking marketing courses, writing articles, and just learning about marketing. So when it was time, I decided that, okay, let me just do this full time.
How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there, and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100 plus interview power phrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit and let's get you hired.
And then I left the cybersecurity job and started marketing full time.
Wow. There's a lot to learn from your story. So let's just take time and spend some time here. You mentioned that, you know, it was from that training that you were on strike while you were still in school at FUNAB. You know, that was how, you know, you got to know about more about Utiva, and then you became a campus ambassador. It's very similar to the story of one of my guests that I interviewed, and she became an ambassador for, I think, Curry Rice, if I remember properly. So, you know, it's very important that when one is in school, you know, you just take advantage of opportunities, because you do not necessarily know how much that opportunity will be like a foundation for your journey in the future and for you. You know, that exposure to Utiva, and then, you know, somehow, even though you did a bank job, that was just by the side, but you know, you came into cybersecurity. And one of the things I liked about what you said was, you know, not allowing whatever certificate you carry dictate your life, because at the end of the day, that certificate is just what it is, a certificate. It doesn't necessarily, like, it's what you can do that will then, you know, prove to people. And for you, even though you had, like, an HND certificate, which is good, but you know how the society, you know, always has a bias for HND, BSc. But for you, you went on to do really amazing things, and you got into cybersecurity. It was a bootcamp, right? 3 months bootcamp.
No, just a few days bootcamp.
Oh, just a few days bootcamp.
Yeah, to basics of cybersecurity.
So how did you then, like, when I say hone in on that skill? Because I train people, you know, to get a job and come into tech, you know, on the freelance HQ and what I do also. And I find out that a lot of times people just have that interest. Oh, I want to learn this. I want to learn UI UX. I want to learn cybersecurity. But they don't necessarily have that drive to follow through. So for you, how did you ensure that just 3 days, you know, you were able to follow through to then land a job that, you know, you spent a year plus at?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
I mean, it was a lot of learning on the job. Yeah, so learning on the job, spending more hours after work to learn about tools, take online courses, and also learning from colleagues who were already in the field. Also, I had somebody as well who transitioned from like economics into cybersecurity at the time. So we were both newbies, and it was really easy for us to like learn from each other, help each other grow and all of that. So in fact, it got to a point where I was now responsible for training other newbies that came into the company at the time. Yeah.
It's good. Your story is very inspiring, and I'm really excited to see all you do in the future. So you're welcome. So let's go back to Middleman and talk a bit about you, the dynamics between you and your other co-founder. Yeah. Has there ever been a time, I know you mentioned also that you both complement each other, like your strengths and weaknesses, you just have a way you balance out, you know, all of that. So has there been a time where you both had like differing opinions on the way the vision of Middleman should go, and you know, if you had, how did you, you know, come to a compromise on the direction to go?
Okay, so we argue a lot.
We also
think alike a lot because we have like similar background, especially in marketing. So sometimes I'm thinking about something, and when I take it to him, he's like, oh, I was thinking about the same thing, I was going to reach out to you. But a lot of the times when we have like different opinions about something, we sort of like to use data to guide our decision, right? So for example, we have like a limit currently on the quantity of Chinese currency that you can get on the website, right? So let's say, for example, we are now trying to consider increasing that minimum. Let's say I now agree, for me, I'm saying that, oh, let's not increase the minimum. And Ajela is saying, oh, let's increase the minimum. We are going to go back to the data to now say that and see, okay, so most of our transactions, are they coming from this particular volume or are they coming from this particular volume? So does it make sense for us to make this decision? So that data will sort of guide us. And other times where it doesn't have to involve data, we sort of have like mentors that we can always go to
get
their opinion. Yeah, but it's always about reaching compromise and putting our customers first, and also like the metrics that matter to us. So is this thing going to get us new users? Is this thing going to help us retain new users? Like if it's not adding to the bottom line, then there's really no point, doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any like advice for co-founders working better together? Because there's been things like, you know, co-founders do not necessarily, after a while, you know, they may not necessarily still be together, or you know, they may have disagreements that will cause problems in the company at the long term. So for you, do you have any advice from your experience for co-founders to work better together?
Yeah, I think the first one, and this is my opinion and based on what has worked for me, is to always do it with somebody that you already know. You've probably been friends before. So personally, I cannot imagine going on this journey with somebody that I have not known for years. If I hadn't done this with Ajela, I would have done it with another friend that I've been with for a while. So doing it with somebody that you've known for a while really goes a long way, right? And also for people that are not doing it with the person that they know, and they're just out there trying to find a co-founder, I always advise that they get somebody that is already looking like they are interested in this field. So for example, now I also co-founded a community for product marketers, and when I wanted to get a co-founder for that, I went for somebody that had a product marketing podcast. So it was obvious that this is a field she was passionate about. She also wanted to get the word out there about product marketing, support product marketing professionals. So if I had gone to somebody that had no interest in product marketing or starting a community, it wouldn't make sense. So that way it's easier for them to also put in the same work that you're going to put in, because they have a passion for that industry or they have a passion for that market. So yeah, really going for somebody that is already doing something similar would just make the journey easier for both parties.
Going for someone that has, you know, similar interests with what you're doing, and also going for someone that, to an extent, you're familiar with, at least you can, you know, tell if this person will do this or not, not a total stranger. Okay, so we are gradually wrapping up, but before we wrap up, I want us to talk about like your pitching. I know you participated in like the Accelerate program, you know, by FCMB Group, and you also pitch at the First Bank FinTech like Innovators Pitch and Middleman Emerge Second.
Won about 5 pitches last year. Let me just put it out.
Yeah, blow your horn, girl. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. So that's why I'm really asking, because winning is awesome. You know, coming second is awesome in the midst of all other startups, because everyone has like the idea, the, you know, they have the idea. But what would you say are some of the things that, you know, you say during your pitch, or how do you package your pitch to investors, to partners, in such a way that, you know, they seem very convinced that, yeah, this person knows what they're doing?
Yeah, okay. I think the first one, or the first mistake that I've seen people make, is the fact that they try to freestyle their pitch. So because they are the owners of the company, they feel like they know everything about their company and they can talk about it anytime you wake them up. But pitches are actually not like that. It's usually structured, and if you don't follow that structure, you are not going to win. You are going to miss it, right? So it follows the structure of you talking about what your business does, the problem you are solving, the solution you've provided, the size of your market, the tractions that you've gained over time, your team, as well as your ask. So if you're not following that structure, there might be a problem. And also, having a script is super important. Like, you cannot just freestyle it. You have to write out your script, write it out, and then rehearse it and say it over and over again. Practice with friends, practice with mentors, get feedback. Are you speaking too slowly? Are you speaking too fast? Are you speaking within the time limit? So for my very first pitch, which was the WeTech pitch for female founders, which I won, it was a 2-minute pitch. My script for that pitch is different from what I used for First Bank pitch, which was like 3 minutes or 4 minutes. It was different from what I used at Zenith Bank. So having like a script is really important, and also focusing on like the important metrics, like things that make you stand out. So for us at the time, in such a short time, we had done like really good volume, which was impressive. So emphasizing or even making your voice go up when you're saying that.
That tone, right?
Exactly. The tone is important. Emphasizing like really impressive numbers, and also the team. Whenever you are talking about your team, it's not the time to be humble. Yeah, humility is not going to help you in that case. So if your team is like, you guys have industry experience, or it's something you learned in school, something you've done for 5-10 years, like really talk about those things and emphasize, because at the early stage of any company, most investors are not investing in the idea, they are investing in the people. So it's really important to let people know that you are the best person to solve this problem. So yeah. What have I mentioned? Not freestyling your pitch.
Having a script
that you practice over and over again. Also, structuring the pitch to follow like the pattern that it should.
Talk about metrics.
Talk about metrics that are important, the tractions you've gained. Also emphasizing the expertise that your team members
that your team has.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm almost tempted to tell you to give me 1-minute pitch for I'll save it. So what has been your experience, you know, day to day as a co-founder? Are there any really challenging parts of, you know, co-founding Middleman, you running the company day to day? What has that been like for you?
What would I say is like the most challenging? I think it's really the operational part, and also managing customer expectations. especially because as a startup, still early, a lot of our services also depends on other people's services, right? We do not we did not build our own infrastructure from scratch, and even if we did, like, there will still be problems, right? NIBS could be down today, but the customer does not care whether NIBS is down. They want to get their money immediately. So I think that's like the most challenging part, having to manage customer expectations, especially when things are out of your own control. Yeah, it's really tough.
That's like the challenge, the operations, right?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Omolawa, it has been so amazing speaking with you. Before you go, I have 3 rapid fire questions, straight answers. So describe middleman in 3 words.
3 words is not going to be easy.
Okay, how many words do you want?
The best payment platform, let me describe
it. What's the most unexpected lesson you've learned as a founder?
That you can build the best product and the market will tell you that they are not using it. Yeah.
Okay. What's one piece of advice that you wish you had received earlier in your entrepreneurial journey?
What was that going to be? I'm coming. I think it would be to execute fast. Yeah, so even though when we started working on middleman in March, but that was not when the idea dropped. So imagine if we had started from when we had the initial idea, we would have made so much more progress compared to what we have now. And even the economy was better at the time, so we would have done more volumes.
True. That's so true. That's a good point. Thank you so much, Omolawa. It's been so nice speaking with you, hearing about, you know, the entire journey of middleman. And I can't wait to hear that middleman is now like a unicorn. I can't wait to hear because I'll be like, oh yeah, I was part of the early, you know, I interviewed her at the earlier stages, and maybe I'll interview you again to see how it was and now how far you've come. But yeah, this has been an amazing conversation. I've enjoyed it. And are there anything interesting that, you know, middleman is working on or you are working on personally for the year that you think you would like to share with the audience?
Yeah, we are definitely working on new products, so yeah, look out for that. We've seen like a lot of knowledge gap in the e-commerce space, so we are working on a product to sort of share resources, learning materials, courses for businesses so they can always grow and scale their business. Yeah, always look out for that.
Nice stuff. All right, thank you everyone for joining this episode of the podcast. I'm sure you've enjoyed it and learned a lot from my conversation with Omolawa. If you have, you know, any thoughts, questions, feel free to drop them in the comments below, and I'll see you in another episode. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, bye.